Sometimes you just want the quick facts. No opinions, no speculation. I'm Claire Thornton, an audio editor with USA Today. My team works around the clock to bring you the Five Things podcast. Every morning, me and my co-host Taylor Wilson help you know what to keep an eye out for that day. We always have a fresh mix of stories, from politics to entertainment to sports, covering all parts of the country. On Sundays, you can lean back with in-depth episodes about stories you may have heard earlier that week. Go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows and start listening to Five Things today.
Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. Governor Ron DeSantis pushes legislation punishing Disney. Lawmakers take up a redistricting plan erasing black congressional seats. And property insurance reforms are in the works, along with possibly some other things in another special session. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson. And those are some of the stories I'll be discussing this week with Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy and Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns. But first... John, Florida lawmakers are calling Disney's number this week. I'm calling your number. What do you have for us?
Right. Yeah, Zach, my number this week is 180. For you geometry buffs, it's not full circle, but only half, a 180.
Yeah, that feels like what the legislature's been doing lately with these special sessions, doing a 180 right towards Governor DeSantis's positions. How about you, Antonio? What do you have?
Well, I have a number, but it's going to give John Dewey Decimal Kennedy some envy here. 3.2.
3.2. All right. As George Bennett liked to say, decimal places are allowed. My number is 1.9 million. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll let you know what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, Governor Ron DeSantis had a few surprises up his sleeves this week. First, announcing a special legislative session in May to take up property insurance reforms, and then expanding a special legislative session this week on redistricting to include a bill targeting Disney. It's special session insanity in Tallahassee right now, and the governor's fight with Disney is the issue that has attracted the most national attention. And really, it's a pretty remarkable when you see the governor of Florida start bashing Disney, which is the state's largest employer and most iconic company, really internationally iconic company and a beloved one. But to take the step of actually punishing Disney is just kind of jaw-dropping. It really seems to be a new era in Florida politics. Antonio, Republicans are spinning this as a sign that the party is willing to break free of its old cozy corporate relationships and take on big business, no matter the clout, while Democrats are saying this smacks of authoritarianism. But the governor seeking to punish Disney because it criticized him over the so-called don't say gay law. What do you think?
Well, I guess we can say that cancel culture never looks so good to Florida Republicans. But Zach, look, you're right.
Yeah, but are you saying that Disney's getting canceled here, Antonio?
Their special taxing district is.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, quite literally, it is getting canceled.
Yeah. So but look, but it's not just the governor. Republican lawmakers are all on this, too. State Representative Randy Fine of Brevard County said this week that Florida is going to remind the Disney company that it is a guest in the Sunshine State. And Senate President Wilton Simpson.
Randy Fine, who moved here, I read today in 2000, by the way, Disney's been here since the 60s.
A guest is in the eye of the beholders here, I guess. I could use, be our guest reference, but, but hey, look, and Wilton Simpson even told Disney to get his legal team together. So it certainly looks a lot like Republicans who have so often decried cancel culture now seem to embrace it, because this is what they're doing. They are, like I said, canceling Disney's special taxing district over nothing less than free speech. But this move against Disney, really, as you pointed out, is not out of character when it comes to Florida Republicans facing up to big businesses that used to be their allies. They have been getting the face of Florida businesses for more than a year. Remember, it was about a year ago when DeSantis belittled Norwegian cruise lines over COVID policies.
And really, Antonio, I would say it goes back a little bit further to, Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran, who was the former House Speaker, going after Visit Florida, the tourism marketing agency, saying that was, basically subsidizing private companies. And there's been a little bit of that vein building within the party for a while. And obviously Trump really exploded it with going after businesses that crossed him nationally.
Yeah. And Marco Rubio have been talking at one point about, the Republican Party being a working class party. So, yeah, there's a lot of roots to this beyond the legislation that kicked this off. But this year, and what we've seen this in the past 2 years has been primarily in the face of COVID policies and this idea of reopening the economy and, the freedom not to wear a mask and the classrooms and all of that. But this year, the governor and the lawmakers also took aim at diversity training programs and policies by corporations to sort of, to be more inclusive and to have within their ranks a discourse and a culture that is more of embracing of diversity. And, the governor has labeled all of that as woke companies. And they've passed this legislation that could open up companies to legal action by employees, So
last year they went after the big tech companies, which have become kind of a villain of conservatives because of their content moderation policies.
Well, that's the origins of cancel culture. The idea that these tech companies, someone on one of their platforms said something that violated certain rules or standards, that they would get kicked off. So, yeah, that's where a lot of the cancel culture rhetoric came out of. But of course, no company right now has drawn DeSantis's ire as Disney has. And to extent, look, this was predictable. We noted in an earlier podcast that Disney kind of also provoked some of this with their late entry into the arena to oppose this parental rights and education law, which has been renamed by critics as the Don't Say Gay law. And certainly this action against Disney is punishment. There's no other reason for it. The only reason it's being taken is because Disney executives turned critical of this new law.
What do you think, Antonio? I mean, Democrats are saying this is an abuse of power, that it's authoritarianism, that you're punishing, you're using the full force of the government to punish your critics. Others I've talked to have said, well, this happens all the time in politics. You reward your friends, punish your foes, maybe not so overtly or dramatically. What do you think?
Well, yes, but in this case, you have a company that has for more than 50, close to 60 years, has had this taxing district. And it's been part of the, there's no other policy issue here. This is simply, you are now going to take retribution. You're using the power of government to take retribution for simply speech rights. This, it's not like Disney is overturning. They're not suing to overturn this law. I mean, they simply came out, the CEO of the company issued a letter to their employees saying, hey, we were late to the game on this, or sorry, this, when you take this kind of action, that's almost textbook authoritarianism. I mean, this is purely retribution and in a significant way.
And the issues have nothing to do with each other. You're talking about, on one hand, this policy bill that Disney didn't like for, they're saying it doesn't align with their values. And then, you go after them on a taxing district that's totally unrelated.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's other measures they could have done. I mean, they could have taken back the incentives to move the 2,000 employees here. I mean, there's all other things they could have done. But again, this is the essence of what we're struggling with in this society right now, in quote unquote, this cancel culture. It is that, generally speaking, the way this works is if you are offended by a company, you don't go there. You tell your people not to, you boycott it, whatever you want to do. In this case, you are really taking dramatic action to significantly harm its operations and ultimately its employer base, which is a lot of your constituents, simply because the CEO wrote a letter to its employees saying, to the company employees saying, hey, look, we regret that we didn't oppose this earlier, that we didn't reach out to the government earlier. Boy, you know, that's pretty harsh. So
what do you think this says about the governor's power? And John, if you have any thoughts on this, I'm curious to hear them too. But I DeSantis, he announces on Tuesday morning that he's going to expand this special session to include this bill punishing Disney. And by Tuesday afternoon, the bill is already cleared. It's in the House and Senate committees, and it's just breezing through. I don't think I've ever seen legislation announced, unveiled, and passed as quickly as this Disney bill. I wonder what it says about the governor's power, and also whether the governor is trying to grow his power with this bill by just punishing his critics and putting everybody on notice that if you cross him, there's going to be big repercussions. But with the legislature going along with this, and Antonio, you pointed out, I don't know that the governor had to twist everybody's arm to go forward with this. I mean, a lot of lawmakers are definitely on board. Randy Fine, who's leading this charge in the House, came out early attacking Disney after they, criticized the so-called Don't Say Gay law. There's lots of other lawmakers who came out and have been aggressive in saying that Disney needs to be punished here. Spencer Roach tweeted that he was meeting with lawmakers to get rid of the special district that governs Disney a few weeks ago. So I don't know if DeSantis, he had to push hard on lawmakers, or if a lot of them wanted to do this. But certainly in the Senate, you would think that they would go slowly on something that affected a major company like this and a major donor to Republicans.
Yeah, but I don't think, to be honest, to a certain extent, when you look at the rank and file of the Republican Party today, this is not a controversial action to them. This Disney has been in the crosshairs, particularly of Christian evangelicals, for a number of years. This is a company that has been a kind of a leader in not only internally with employees in terms of being very open and being very accommodating of diversity, but even in its products, the movies that it's done, the shows that they have gone out and been a leader in many ways in a more inclusive society. And to a lot of people, particularly when it comes to LGBTQ+ issues in many parts of Florida, that's a red line that Disney has crossed. And I think for a lot of the lawmakers in these areas, it would have been more politically risky not to have taken action. I mean, I'd love to hear.
You don't think, though, it's kind of uncomfortable? I mean, they hold their fundraisers at Disney. They go to these lawmakers professionally and personally are at Disney all the time, and this is the state's largest employer. You don't think it's slightly awkward and uncomfortable for them to be fighting the largest employer in the state?
Yeah, it is awkward and uncomfortable. But to be honest, I think it's starting to get that it was getting very awkward and uncomfortable because I think they were getting pushback. I see it on social media all the time. Yeah, they were getting pushback, and they took an action. We'll see how this works out. I mean, we should pull John into this.
Yeah, what's your take, John?
I think you're right. It's a very, the legislature is very supplicant to the governor. They'll do whatever he wants. And in this case, they are also hearing the same drumbeat coming from, the Fox News of the world, that conservative social media, conservative mainstream media that is pushing this as a front burner issue, that there must be something to rein in Disney because they are pushing back against the parental rights legislation, the so-called Don't Say Gay bill. So I think these legislators, once they return to their home districts, it's one of those kind of believe it or not, I guess they also started hearing from constituents that were saying there must be some, something we can do about Disney. And of course, the governor is very creative. And this discussion about the Reedy Creek Improvement District, which is a part of the Florida landscape, the self-governing authority given Disney, that's something that they saw as a easy avenue that they could attack. They're attacking it, but they're attacking it in a very guileful way, too, in the sense that none of this will take effect for a year. So they have given themselves time to sober up, basically. And they've also given themselves time to extract campaign contributions from Disney, because Disney will probably come back now soon, kind of hat in hand, like, you know, let's be friends. They'll find a way to start contributing again. They have paused their contributions, but they'll unpause those contributions pretty soon. And then at the same time, DeSantis also will be cashing in on contributions coming from the right, from people that have really been worked up about Disney. So DeSantis gets it both ways. He'll be getting it from the company that is, you know, begging for forgiveness, and he'll be getting contributions from the conservatives who have been calling for this, you know, pound of flesh out of the state's largest employer.
Yeah, I think that politically this helps DeSantis a lot. I mean, it doesn't, even though Disney is a pretty beloved company, when you start taking positions on social issues, on cultural issues, I think that it's gloves off, and conservatives are happy to see somebody like DeSantis punching back on this. And I think politically it helps him. And I just don't know, though. I think there are some Republicans out there who are squeamish about punishing a company or anybody like this simply for speaking their mind. And it'll be interesting to see kind of how, you know, that sort of, you know, that, I guess, posture that DeSantis has put himself in, whether that, you know, plays well in the long term. I mean, when you kind of set yourself up as somebody who has absolute authority in politics to, you know, dish out, you know, punishment and rewards, it can be, you know, pretty, I guess you can get a lot of benefits from that in the short term, but it potentially could lead to excesses in the long term. So
there are, but I think John puts out a really important point, and there is that fail-safe element in this, that it doesn't take effect for another year. So basically they can reap the rewards in the 2022 elections. And if this really does have unintended consequences, they got a year to address them. So I think that may satisfy that squeamishness.
Well, talking
I think punishment for speaking your mind, as you phrased it, I don't think that's a bad thing anymore within the Republican base. I think that's something that's supported. So
it's funny because that's what the whole cancel culture is about. Punishment for speaking your mind, that people are upset that people are getting kicked off of Twitter or Facebook or whatever for speaking their mind. And, you know, this whole idea that, you know, everything is so politically correct now and you can't just say what you think. And this seems to be the exact same, like as Antonio said, you know, canceling Disney for speaking their mind on legislation. There seems to be some big hypocrisy there.
Zach, you know, cancel culture, don't knock it until you've tried it.
Well, speaking of the governor's power, there was another issue that lawmakers were in Tallahassee this week. Not only is DeSantis getting his way with legislation punishing Disney, but the lawmakers are also deferring to the governor and advancing a congressional redistricting map drawn by his team. John, it's absolutely unprecedented to have the governor completely take over redistricting like this. And his plan also is a really big departure from the last 30 years of redistricting in the way it treats Black voters.
Yeah, Florida Black leaders are warning that this congressional map just turns back the clock, likely reducing the ability of minority voters to elect their candidate of choice, at least in North Florida and parts of Central Florida. Congressman Al Lawson's District 5, which goes from Jacksonville to Tallahassee right now, that would be turned into a Duval County-only Republican-dominated district. And Congresswoman Val Demings' Orlando area district would lose a lot of its Black population, making it less probable that a Black representative would be elected there. So, you know, the bottom line is, of the state's four districts now held by Black Democrats, two could be eliminated. And for a state that has only elected its first Black members of Congress 30 years ago, since late in the 19th century during Reconstruction, this stands as a sorry setback for minority voters in the state. Indeed, Florida's only Black majority county, that's Gadsden County near the Georgia line, that would be included in a very Republican red district, losing the Black congressman, that's Al Lawson. He's represented voters there since 2016. Now DeSantis is calling this map race neutral, And Democrats are countering that, saying that DeSantis has basically neutralized black voters. Now, whether the map will be thrown out by a court remains an open question. DeSantis thinks he's on firm legal ground with his proposal. He's citing recent United States Supreme Court rulings on redistricting, which may be influenced by the court now having a solid conservative majority. And the state Supreme Court now has three of its seven members appointed by DeSantis. That also may help him with any eventual review of the map there. But even if opponents are eventually successful at having the congressional plan overturned, it is likely to take a lot of time. And that means that this map will probably be in place for June candidate qualifying and for the November elections. The map is seen as likely producing 20 Republican members of Congress from Florida out of 28 seats. That's a sharp increase from the state's current 16 Republicans and 11 Democrats. The state is gaining a seat this year because of population increases. So perhaps four more Republican members of Congress from Florida. And that should help the National Republican Party with its efforts to try to win control of the U.S. House in November's midterm elections. And of course, for DeSantis, it's another opportunity for him to look like some kind of hero to his party nationally as he starts shaping up for that White House run that we all expect him to make in 2024. But for black Floridians, it's a tough time. Organizers say they will work to get up the vote efforts this fall and somehow try to improve black voter turnout to vote against DeSantis in the fall when he's on the ballot for re-election. And of course, on a statewide level, black voters still have their current level of strength, about 15% of the state vote. But in these individual congressional districts under this plan, their impact and influence is almost certain to be diluted, especially across North Florida, which the map likely turns completely Republican red. Maybe it's not surprising based on the policies that we've seen coming from the governor lately, but DeSantis doesn't seem like he's looking to help any community that doesn't agree with him. And black voters, because they vote overwhelmingly Democrat, are an easy target for him. And black Floridians are certain to become more politically isolated and underrepresented if this map is endorsed by a court. So that's something we're going to be watching in coming months. But once this with this map being approved, there seems to be no turning back. That's the map that's probably going to be used in November.
So, John, there's currently five black members of Congress from Florida, including one Republican, Byron Donalds, down in Naples. But that's a Republican leaning seat. It's not a African American. It doesn't have a significant
plurality.
Right. So, but there's currently four congressional seats that have a large number of black voters, so that it's likely that they're going to elect a black member of Congress, and this would go down to two under the current redistricting plan or the proposed one.
That's right, cut in half.
And yeah,
it's going to be remarkably different across much of Florida. It's really almost like the upper half of Florida now is going to be pretty much all Republican red. Everything from the Orlando and Tampa line going north is likely to elect a Republican.
And that's a part of the state where really you had, it's kind of, there's an old saying in Florida, right? The further north you go, the further south you go. That's the
right
state that has probably the most painful racial history in Florida, where you had plantations, you had, black people who were very oppressed for a long time until, and then who didn't have any representation in Congress until 1992 when the districts changed. And now this basically wipes that out, right?
That's right. Yeah. In a story I wrote recently, I pointed out how Gadsden County, which I had mentioned is the state's only majority black county, that in roughly 1960, Gadsden County had 7 registered black voters out of a population of almost 12,000 people. That was a result of, racial violence, racial segregation. You know, when it came to voting rights, they hardly existed. And that is the county that, for the last 6 years anyway, has been represented by Lawson. And even prior to that, there was a Democratic leaning seat that included Gadsden County, and that took in the Leon County area too, in Tallahassee. So all that's gone. The Gadsden County voters and all those voters across North Florida that are black across that long belt where you pointed out, it's sort of the history of plantations in Florida, those voters are all going to be in what will likely be Republican districts from here on in.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out that this isn't ancient history. The guy who you interviewed for your story, John, which is very good, and everybody should go check that out, the head of the NAACP in Gadsden County, was a young man when there was only 7 black registered voters in Gadsden County. I mean, he was he's now the head of the NAACP, and he's a senior citizen now. But he was voting age when there were still major impediments to African Americans even registering and actually voting in that area. So pretty interesting to see how things are changing again with those congressional seats. Well, Florida's legislative overtime doesn't end this month with redistricting and Disney, but will extend into May with a special session on property insurance and possibly other issues. DeSantis had been getting a lot of pressure to deal with the state's property insurance crisis, with critics saying he's too focused on culture war issues and not enough on pocketbook concerns. And he responded on Monday by calling a special session next month on the insurance issue. But that might not be all that lawmakers discuss. The governor is saying that other issues could be on the table. There's been talk of passing so-called constitutional carry legislation that would allow people to carry guns without concealed weapons permits. Other ideas for legislation have been tossed around. Antonio, after we got this surprise from DeSantis on the Disney bill being dropped this week, you think he has a few other surprises up his sleeves here?
Yeah, but something tells me he will not go anti-woke or take Disney-like punitive actions against the insurance industry. And that's just not been successful in the past. Back in the late 2000s, during one of the state's cyclical insurance crises, then Republican Governor Charlie Crist went after the insurance companies and declared that he was going to drive the last nail into the coffin of the insurance industry. Well, that didn't work out really well for Crist, who actually closed the lid on his days as a Republican leader. Now, the property insurance landscape also holds plenty of pitfalls for DeSantis and governors. I mean, it's been an intractable problem for the last 30 years, ever since Hurricane Andrew tore through the bottom of the peninsula in 1992. Unlike Disney, insurance is not a leisure industry, nor is it a discretionary purchase, as economists would describe it. Home insurance is a must-have for the bulk of Florida homeowners. And right now, it is a marketplace in crisis. Some insurance companies have gone belly up. Some insurance companies are no longer writing policies in Florida. And other insurance companies are canceling policies, or better said, not renewing them after they expire. In the past 6 months, a handful of insurance companies have either canceled or refused to renew close to 500,000 homeowner policies in Florida. Full transparency here, guys. I just got my letter this week telling me my policy will not be renewed once it expires in the summer.
Wow.
So the loss of insurance coverage is a reason why Citizens Property Insurance, the insurance company of last resort in Florida, is again approaching 1 million policyholders. That is problematic because if the state were to get crushed by a major hurricane, Florida taxpayers would theoretically be on the hook to pay claims if Citizens ran out of money. Although we have to say that in the past, the company has found ways of getting extra amounts of capital and even levied assessments to get itself back into the black after a major storm. Now, Citizens already took a proactive approach this year by moving to raise its rates by another 11%. And by the way, once Citizens raises its rates, private insurers generally follow. So even if you're not a Citizens customer, your rates are likely to go up too. So the question that you say, Zach, is does DeSantis have an ace or some plan up his sleeve? I have to bet that he does. Property insurance has been a lose-lose proposition for Florida governors in the past. And by calling this special session and addressing taking on this issue, DeSantis is effectively taking ownership of this crisis. And it would be stunning if the legislature convened and not offer up a solution. It would also be politically bad news for a governor seeking re-election in 5 months, because it would show, as you said earlier, it would show an inability to fix problems and cast him as a governor who finds it very easy to toss around red meat cultural war issues. But when it comes down to household pocketbook problems, he doesn't have solutions.
Yeah, and it should be noted that, I mean, property insurance is a wickedly difficult issue in Florida. You know, it's a very risky state. You got a lot of hurricanes and things. A lot of the big insurance players have pulled out or restricted their business in Florida. So you have a lot of smaller companies that are not as secure. But, you know, there's also been a lot of criticism of the industry, of its financial practices, and that it doesn't operate in a way that is, that is consumer friendly. So it would be fascinating to see what DeSantis does here. I think it probably for him, just doing something is the important thing. It's not clear that whatever he does will have a big impact on prices and stabilizing the industry, because that's been very hard to do. But politically, it seemed like he was, this was a potential liability for him. And so at least he can say they did something at this point. We'll move on to some numbers here. John, you want to tell us about yours?
Yeah, Zach, as you know, I've been focusing on redistricting these days, and 180 was my number, and that's the number of miles that Congressional District 2 in the Florida Panhandle stretches, and the redistricted congressional map that has been promoted by Governor DeSantis and is adopted by the state legislature. The boundaries for the state's 28 districts that, you know, are going to give Republicans probably 20 seats up from the current 16, The 180-mile CD2, that stretches across North Florida from roughly Panama City to Madison, and it's 55% Republican. That's the one that's going to include the decidedly Democratic Gadsden County, the state's only majority Black county, along with Leon County. That's the state's capital county that, like Gadsden, is heavily Democratic, but it's now going to be subsumed in a Republican district. But that the interesting thing about 180 miles of District 2, that seems to be okay with Governor Ron DeSantis and the Republican legislature, even though the governor has been railing about the 200-mile district that currently is Congressman Al Lawson's Jacksonville to Tallahassee district. That was considered a racial gerrymander, DeSantis says, and it should be, you know, that's one of the reasons why he basically called this session and recast the congressional map, trying to get rid of Lawson's district. One of the reasons being, okay, it has a large Black population, but also in DeSantis's view, it was 200 miles long, which seemed crazy to him. Well, there's a 180-mile long Republican-leaning district that seems to be pretty fine. So you got to wonder about this hypocrisy that's being tucked in here when it comes to what is going to be acceptable and what isn't going to be acceptable. That District 2 goes across 16 North Florida counties, and it basically connects a lot of Republican red voters while roping in these unfortunate Democrats in Gadsden and Leon counties. As I'd mentioned, District 2 would go from Panama City to the town of Madison. And for those used to driving Interstate 10 in North Florida, just further east on 10, that's where Lawson's 200-mile district currently picks up. And it's been branded bad, at least in the view of DeSantis, in part because of its length. But, you know, here, even as the governor's staff has been crowing about the compact nature of his congressional map, the new 180-mile long District 2 is not the only long district that DeSantis is proposing and Republican legislators are embracing. Congressional District 18 in the center of the state, that stretches 150 miles. That includes eight counties and goes from Lakeland to Naples. And again, it's 61% Republican voting. So the Republicans seem to have no problem with the shape or the length of districts as long as they vote Republican. So the importance of compactness in these district lines appears to be, you know, it matters most if DeSantis can use a lack of compactness as a weapon against a North Florida black performing district that would elect a Democrat. But, you know, when it comes to wide ranging districts that elect Republicans, in his view, it seems to be no problem. Well, we'll see if the courts agree with the governor that it's not a problem.
Yeah, that compactness issue sounds like something that will be litigated. Antonio, what's your number all about?
3.2 as in 3.2%, which is Florida's reported unemployment rate. That's just 0.2% away from the record low of 3% in early 2020, just before the pandemic hit. So as one employment official told me a couple of weeks ago, we have pretty much fully recovered from the pandemic economic recession. The question is, who will voters give credit for this to? DeSantis and Florida Republicans or the Biden administration and Democrats? Well, we won't find out until November, but so far it's DeSantis who has been masterful or diabolical, depending on your political preference, in being able to take credit for good results while also being able to blame poor outcomes on Democrats. For example, every time there's a strong employment report, DeSantis is pointing out that he reopened the economy and kept it open. But he's equally quick to blame inflation and price increases, which surges in employment do produce, on the Biden administration. Never mind, too, that the COVID death toll in Florida has topped 73,000 and many public health experts have chided DeSantis for recklessness. Never mind that the millions of Floridians who've gotten sick and missed work have had that's had a disruptive influence on the economic flow and productivity, and that's contributed to product shortages and supply chain problems that have cost consumers. Nonetheless, the governor has been effective in stealing candy from the Democrats. For example, he took money from the Biden administration last year and then turned around and took credit as he handed out bonuses to teachers and first responders. And John has talked plenty about how these record budgets that the governor and the Republican legislature have passed in the past 2 years have been chock full of money from the Biden administration. Now, there are Democrats out there, and here in Palm Beach County, U.S. Representative Lois Frankel of West Palm Beach is one of them, who's out there trying to do their best to message the help that they say they've provided the citizenry. Nonetheless, recent polls, which you have cited in the past, guys, show that DeSantis has a favorable approval rating, largely because he has succeeded in convincing Floridian that his policies have succeeded, and whatever is bad out there is the problem is created by the Democrats.
All right, and my number is 1.9 million. That's the number of black voters in Florida in the 2020 election, and that's just over one-sixth of the electorate. That's a number worth remembering as DeSantis antagonizes the black community with a congressional map that wipes out two black congressional seats. Will black voters be motivated to try and seek revenge on Election Day? Do they have enough political clout to make a difference in the race? Those are questions worth considering going forward. Black voters' turnout spiked in 2018 in Florida with Andrew Gillum, the black former mayor of Tallahassee, as the Democratic nominee for governor, but Gillum still lost to DeSantis. One reason may be that white voter turnout increased even more that year. DeSantis has been playing to the GOP base with culture war issues that could help boost Republican voter turnout and counteract any increase in motivation within the black community this year. But the governor seems to be doing everything possible to give black voters a reason to hit the polls. Not only is he pushing a redistricting map that will decrease black representation in Congress, but he also has been a leader in trying to limit how schools and businesses approach racial issues. And he championed a bill in the wake of the Black Lives Matter protests that critics saw as an attempt to discourage future demonstrations. Black voter turnout hit historic levels in Florida when Obama was on the ballot, and he won the state twice. So that indicates, Black voter turnout hit historic levels in Florida when Obama was on the ballot, and they won the state twice. So a big spike in black turnout does have the potential to be a difference maker here. That wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production guru this week, Chandler Hoeffel, and thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.